Support for this program is provided by Chevron, the human energy company.
Hey, this is Politico Energy. I'm Catherine Morehouse. For years, we've known that coal power has been dramatically declining. But now, the industry's short-term outlook seems to be a lot worse. For one, the Biden administration is expected to drop some pricey pollution rules this week. And then later this year, the industry will lose some powerful friends in Congress. Add in the collapse of the Baltimore Key Bridge, which choked off an important coal export terminal, and the outlook for coal is looking worse and worse by the day. So what does that mean for a sector that's already in decline? And will the industry find new political champions on Capitol Hill? To answer those questions and more, I chat with Politico's Alex Guillen. It's Wednesday, April 24th.
Over a period of the last 50 years or so, coal mining employment, actual coal mining jobs, has been going down because of increased automation. So, you know, they're using more and more machinery to pull out coal, especially with the shift toward the west and surface mining, as compared to the more complicated underground mining you tend to see in the east. And then about 15 years ago came the so-called fracking revolution, where we were able to tap a lot more natural gas than we had before. And so that and investments in renewable energy that finally brought wind and solar down to competitive prices with fossil fuels all contributed to a long-term decline of coal.
And you're also reporting about a different kind of decline for coal, I suppose. That's pretty interesting. And that's that the coal industry is losing some key friends in Congress, like Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia, and Senator Mitch McConnell is stepping down from his leadership role as well. So could you break down what is happening there and how it could impact coal's power on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, so Joe Manchin is retiring after this year. Mitch McConnell is not retiring as a senator, but he is stepping back as the Republican leader. Both of them are obviously from coal states. They both have heavy interest in coal and have long defended it. Just the fact that these two are stepping back from that at this point, particularly coming right when the Biden administration is finalizing several regulations that are going to make burning coal for electricity, you know, more expensive, more difficult, and probably drive more retirements of coal plants. It's marking really a bit of a change in the landscape here in Washington. I mean, for a long time now, both senators have been key on this issue, particularly whenever Democrats have been in power. Joe Manchin has been pretty critical on it for multiple reasons, especially in the last few years. With Democrats having razor-thin majorities in the Senate, he has been able to wield that influence significantly to get pro-coal and pro-fossil fuel stuff into legislation. You know, for example, the Inflation Reduction Act, the Biden administration talks all the time about the hundreds of billions of dollars it invests into clean energy. And that's true, but that law also included a major expansion of the carbon capture tax credit. It's worth more money now. It's easier to get for power plants. It's going to last a long time. That's making, potentially, it's making carbon capture and thus coal, you know, a more financially friendly option going forward.
Okay, so those are obviously two pretty powerful players in the coal industry. But obviously, there are other states that produce coal or burn coal or what have you. I'm wondering if there are other potential politicians, members of Congress on Capitol Hill who could step in and replace those two powerful people as a potential new advocate for coal on Capitol Hill.
There definitely are on the Republican side. Coal still has plenty of friends among the GOP. John Barrasso, of course, is the top Republican on the Energy Committee. He's running for the whip, which is the number two position among the Republicans. So Shelley Moore Capito is the top Republican on the Environment Committee. She's from West Virginia, of course, and is aligned basically on climate and environmental issues with Joe Manchin. So she's in a position there either to become chair or to remain on as ranking member. You know, there are a number of other Republicans from coal-producing states. So really, the industry there is still pretty well-placed. The outlook on the Democratic side, though, is pretty different. Joe Manchin was sort of the last Democrat who was so full-throatedly in favor of coal. This has happened in part because polarization over the last 15 years in Appalachia, where Democrats used to have a lot more power, and that area is now just deep red across the board. That means there's just fewer Democrats from those areas, Manchin being pretty much the last one. Now, certainly there are still Democrats who are from states that produce coal and who work on certain coal issues. You know, Pennsylvania has Bob Casey and John Fetterman. That's a relatively major coal state. Ohio, Illinois, John Tester in Montana. So there are still Democrats who are from coal states and work on these issues, but they work on them in a different way. You know, whereas Joe Manchin and Mitch McConnell did a lot to push back against climate regulation from the executive branch, for example, the remaining Democrats that you see are not really doing that. They tend to focus more on union issues, protecting labor and jobs. They tend to focus more on environmental remediation and making sure that mines are cleaned up once they've been shut down, as opposed to, you know, opposing climate regulation. So really, it is going to be quite different on the Democratic side once Joe Manchin is gone.
So it sounds like there's been a real shift in who is backing coal on Capitol Hill. But have the political arguments themselves around coal changed as its position in the power mix has changed? What have those arguments been looking like lately? And is it a shift from what we've seen in years past?
It definitely is. I mean, if you go back about 15 years, the argument for coal was that it was one, cheap, and two, abundant. And so what we've seen since then on the price side, natural gas is now very competitive, renewables are now very competitive, and potentially these regulations coming up are going to add to the cost of coal, the U.S. fleet for which, of course, is aging more and more, and no new coal is being built. And then on the supply side, coal is increasingly difficult and more expensive to mine generally. We've sort of essentially tapped all the easiest to reach deposits of coal. And so now it's getting, even with automation, it's getting more and more expensive to go and get that coal. So instead of the argument now being that coal is cheap and abundant, what we're seeing a lot more of is that coal is needed for reliability. The grid, of course, needs to be up 24/7. This is particularly challenging during periods of extreme weather, as we've seen with, especially with cold snaps. What we've seen there is that coal backers are saying, we need coal because it stays online when really cold weather can knock out renewables or natural gas and pipelines become more difficult to operate. So what they're arguing is that we still need coal in order to make sure that we can keep the lights on and have a reliable source of power compared to solar and wind, which is, you know, more intermittent. That is what we're seeing a lot more of now among, you know, the people who are sort of considered coal champions in Washington.
Also, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission took a critical step aimed at helping get new nuclear technologies to market on Tuesday. The NRC approved a proposed rule that would streamline the environmental review process for advanced nuclear reactors. The move comes during a major bipartisan moment on Capitol Hill aimed at getting advanced reactors to a commercial scale in the U.S., including by speeding up the regulatory process at the NRC. For more news on energy and the environment, subscribe to our free newsletter at politico.com/power-switch. And subscribe to Politico Pro to read our morning energy newsletter. Some of the music in today's show was composed by the mysterious Breakmaster Cylinder. And that's our show. I'm Catherine Morehouse, and we'll see you back tomorrow.
Support for this program is provided by Chevron. Chevron is taking action to keep methane in the pipe. Their 2028 upstream methane intensity target is set to be 53% below the 2016 baseline. And they're committed to evolving facility designs and operating practices. That's energy in progress. Learn more at chevron.com/methane.